You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for August 29th, 2014. It's Not Safe for Work.
Recorded live from just behind the firing range at the Uzi Kids Daycare, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
It's been that kind of week.
It's been a very hard week in the news.
You know, let's see if we can get Americans to care about guns. Let's try a 9-year-old with an Uzi. Let's do that.
Let's go for a kindergarten full of kids.
Yeah. Let's slaughter a kindergarten full of kids. Maybe that'll wake people up.
Yeah. Nope. You know, to be perfectly fair, I think most people would welcome reasonable gun control.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Most people would welcome an increase in the minimum wage. Most people think Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security are a good idea. Most people think most liberal ideas are good ideas. But there is a cohort of people who are driven by money and ideology, and in some cases, in the case of the NRA, just evil. They're just loathsome, awful people. This is not your daddy's NRA, not your granddaddy's. This is not a gun safety society that believes in gun control, in intelligent gun control. This is an arms merchant trying to push as many murdering products to as many people as possible, and if you get killed, well, it's your own damn fault and not theirs.
Yep.
So I'm sure most people, if we put it up to a plebiscite, we'd have gun control tomorrow.
Yeah. But the people who are holding it back are, ironically or not ironically, in situations where they're completely protected from loaded weapons.
Yes.
Oh, you can't, at an NRA convention, you can't carry a loaded weapon into an NRA convention.
No.
That's not allowed.
You can't carry a loaded weapon into Congress.
Yes. Yeah, or the Supreme Court. Nope.
Yeah. No, you can't even. There, in fact, there's a barrier.
Yes.
I'll recall that they won't afford to pregnant women, women who want to use an abortion clinic. The Supreme Court won't give them the same protections that it arrogates to itself.
Yeah.
But they're perfectly willing to sit behind their armed guards and their concrete walls and their privilege.
But pregnant women who want to terminate a pregnancy belong in a shame hut, Driftglass.
They do. That's our job, to escort them to a shame hut. And once their child has been born, hand them a gun.
Uh-huh.
That's the job of
the Republican right wing. Party. The right wing in America. Movement. Yep.
Let's not pretend this is both sides. Your country is being wrecked by
this
one.
This is not a problem in Washington, Chuck Todd. This is not broke. Is Washington broken?
Yeah, it is.
No, yeah, but it's broken because of one side.
And you're sitting across from one of the guys that broke it. So why don't you ask him that question?
Yeah.
No, John McCain's on there to tell Chuckles how to run his show.
And, yeah, got any advice for me? Seriously.
Yeah.
Chuck Todd had John McCain on his weekday morning show as a surprise guest.
Oh.
Ask his advice about running Meet the Press.
Usually we just talk about the kind of soup they're serving.
They had him on for like 14 minutes.
Yeah.
And one of my colleagues at Crooks and Liars, I hope she doesn't mind me quoting her, said, "Wow, Chuck, that's pretty long for a blowjob."
Yeah. Well, he's an old man. He requires a lot of help.
Oh, I hadn't thought of it that way. I was thinking stamina and not weakness. Oh, well.
Is that you down there, Lindsay? Oh, those chin whiskers tickle. It must be Chuck Todd. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. On that note, we are going to, for this episode, do a best of The Professional Left. Thanks to our listener, Scott, who lovingly put this together, these 50 minutes or so of audio. And thank you, Scott, for letting us use this. He said, "Well, it's your work." I said, "Yeah, but you cut it together for us." And we appreciate it so much.
And I've listened to the first 20 minutes, and it's really just nothing but me talking about David Brooks. So
no, it's not.
No, it's not. It really is not. It's a fine piece of work, and we are extremely grateful to Scott for doing this, just because he's a nice guy. And the timing couldn't be better.
His wife, he married up, by the way.
Yeah.
He should go and tell his wife, "I married up," because he did.
Well, the timing is excellent.
And the timing is excellent because our house is flooded. Our whole neighborhood is flooded. And your car is flooded.
My car is actually flooded out. It's flooded up to the passenger seats. It was sitting in the
flooded.
sitting in the street, and we were getting rain, and then we got a call, and the street, I have never seen it flooded this high.
It's and our street floods probably 4 or 5 times a year. We'll have a stream on our street.
Yeah.
Thanks to infrastructure spending, we get our own little lake about 4 times a year.
And it's, you know,
this is up, yeah, and it drains out. Once it stops raining, it drains out within an hour or two. This water came into the yard, went up more than halfway up our front yard, toward the house.
And I did something you're probably not supposed to. I ran out, I was up to my knees, I'm a tall guy, in water. Mm-hmm. Got into my little car, which started a miracle. And I pulled it sort of up over the curb and onto higher ground. But it's full of sloshy water, which should be pretty ripe by tomorrow morning. And this is all inside baseball, but this is why we're so grateful for Scott, and your timing couldn't be better. There is right now, as we speak, water shooting up out of the sewer pipe in our basement. It's backing up. That hopefully will go away. But we usually get a trickle down there, and that happens in older houses, and we accept that. But the backing up of the sewer into the basement for the second time
since you moved here,
since I moved here, is
thanks infrastructure spending by Republicans. This is a white Republican area where people don't like those taxes, you know.
Like the taxes. And last time there was actually a sewer collapse, we found out.
Uh-huh.
And this time it's just a friggin' fire hose.
It's just flood. Yeah, we had flash flood tonight, and it's going down now. It stopped raining. I'm grateful that it stopped raining.
And I did rescue one of our internet kitties from the little island of dry.
Oh, he likes to go in the basement and hunt bugs.
Yes, and he was trapped.
And he got trapped down there. He didn't want to get his feet wet. I wonder why.
So it's really
that was Barack Hussein, the Kenyan usurper, down the basement, by the way.
And he is fine. All the kids are fine. All the cats are fine.
The kids are very excited by this flood.
We have electricity.
It means there might not be school tomorrow. You never know.
School tomorrow.
I know.
But getting what will be my dead car by tomorrow out of the way of.
We're gonna have to.
It's nothing that anyone.
It's really, we are so blessed. Driftglass, we are very blessed.
I remind myself of that.
We have a car insurance agent you can call. Yep. We have listeners who will help us. Yep. By the way, we're gonna have to do a Kickstarter for our basement. I'm warning everyone.
Yeah, because it's
there's just too many paychecks that this will eat up.
Yeah,
we can't afford to get our basement fixed. So
but that is not for tonight. And this is Thursday evening, so. Mm-hmm. We were going to crank on this, and then the heavens opened, and the lights started flickering, and it was like,
oh, good, the power will go out right when we're trying to record. Yeah. That's good.
And if nothing else, we are, I believe, at least one of the few Lou Gehrig's. I don't mean Lou Gehrig's disease. I mean, we do a podcast every week because we know that you tune in every week, and we know that you listen, and we know from your comments you value what we do a lot.
Yeah,
and it means a lot to you.
We do.
So we really try to make sure that we have 247 weeks uninterrupted so far.
Yeah, well, close to that. Yeah.
Close to that. And we were just like, you know, this week's been really busy for lots of reasons, some good, some not. We're running out of time tomorrow, and the weekend's going to be a wreck. And then the heavens opened up.
Mm-hmm.
And then my wonderful wife said, you know, we have this best of episode that, and it's really good, that Scott cut together. Like, thank you so much. Thank you. Doesn't mean we're not going to fundraise off of it, but.
So let's do the Wayne's World transition.
Brought to you by Heal Our Country. This is the greatest hits of the professional left.
It's the professional left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
It's not safe for work.
Because when Obamacare and anti-Obamacare collide, there's this amazing reaction where people don't know what, but I like all the stuff on the menu. I just don't like the paper it's printed on. Then you're a moron.
You're a moron. Order the food.
But this really is a test. Sort of, Kentucky is now taking a Common Core test, I guess. You know, test your collective state IQ. The thing you like is the thing the black guy in the White House got for you.
And Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid got for you.
And the thing that's trying to be taken away from you is the thing that your senator is trying to take.
Yep.
They're the same thing.
They're the same thing.
And the fact that he thinks he can say hocus pocus dominocus, they're not, and thinks you're stupid enough to believe that, really tells me a lot about how much esteem Mitch McConnell has for the people who vote for him.
For better or worse, his opponent seems to feel that she needs to walk a very narrow tightrope about Obamacare. And but to her credit, she's been very specific about the things she would change.
Yes.
Unlike Mitch McConnell, who simply said, repeal Obamacare, but that doesn't mean you're going to lose any of your candy.
Just get rid of it. Just get rid of it. And replace it with what? Oh, this other thing that's McConnell care. It's the same goddamn thing.
You know, there's another, there was another way to go with this, which is Obama could have said, we're going to call it Romney care. Yeah. National Romney care.
Well, let's be clear. Obamacare is not Barack Obama's name.
No.
The Obamacare is the Republican epithet.
That's what they, and we finally just adopted it on our side to say, okay, gonna do the time, do the crime. You
like, exactly, like teabagging was not our expression. It was yours.
You came up with teabagging, yes.
You didn't use the Google to look up what it meant.
What it really meant.
We're happy to help you embrace that. And now it's like, quit saying that. Well, okay, no. So, you decided you would call it Obamacare because it was going to be a failure. There were going to be death panels and Sarah Palin was going to be your vice president. And none of that ever happened. I made a note to myself in our little pregame notes about how not to plan a wedding.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
It was a little post I tossed off, but it was, you know, if like me, you were silly enough to go to an alternate hippie run high school, at least for a couple of years. I went to one such place and everything had to be done by consensus. Every single fucking thing had to be done by consensus. And you had to have town meetings, quote unquote, that would go on for days to plan a picnic. It was an education in human nature and sort of how teenagers can behave. But let's suppose you're trying to plan a wedding. And let's suppose you went to one of these high schools and you want everyone in your family, every friend, every stakeholder, everyone who's interested in your wedding to have a say. So we'll have a round table.
There are whole reality shows built around that premise, believe me.
That's my fear. And everyone gets around the table and you have people who want a traditional Wiccan ceremony and people who want high church, low church, no church. Let's go to a judge for the 5-minute ceremony or whatever it is. In our backyard, 1,000 people, 5 people, etc. And you just let them thrash it out and thrash it out and thrash it out. And there's no budget really. There's no time limit. It's just, I'm going to get married. My spouse and I are going to get married. Let's figure out sort of all the options that are available. But that's a suicidally dumb way to run wedding planning. Mm-hmm. The thing that escalates it into truly ludicrous proportions that makes it impossible is that if you invite someone to the table who firmly believes you should not get married.
Yep.
And who says very clearly, oh, no, I think your marriage will destroy freedom in America. Mm-hmm. Therefore, no matter what you do, I'm going to be opposed to it. Yep. No matter what committee I serve on, I'm going to find a way to turn that committee into a tool to destroy your wedding planning because I think this wedding is a bad idea.
Yep.
That's the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I'm perfectly happy to talk about Social Security, fixing Social Security with anybody other than people who think Social Security should be destroyed. And I made it painfully clear that that is all they're interested in for the last 70 years.
Right.
Medicare, ditto. Medicaid, ditto. Any other social program, education system. I'm happy to sit around a big old table with people of goodwill who are agnostic or high church or low church. But you can't invite people and give them a veto. Giving them control over your process, who tell you up front, I'm here to destroy the process.
Yep.
Where's my seat? Yep. Fuck you. You don't have a seat. Go away. Mm-hmm. I got mad at a rerun of The Daily Show.
Yeah.
Because Jon Stewart was just doing his jaw-dropping, fist-shaking indignation, blah, 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 about something or other. I forget what it was. I just sort of had it. I said, you know, every one of these issues now comes with the caveat that we are talking to no one but ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That there is absolutely nothing that a reasonable person can do to budge a Republican to force the people who are causing all of this strife and trouble and destruction and hate and rage mm-hmm. to change. And there's nothing we can do to get the vast number, 50% of Americans who don't give a shit, who don't pay any attention to any of this at all, to pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. We are talking to ourselves. And so we can have, isn't it terrible to shutting down abortion clinics? Yeah, it is. Isn't it terrible that that gun nuts are being turned loose in this country? Yeah, it is. Isn't it awful that that children in schools are being taught science is a joke and climate change is a fraud perpetuated
by... Well, at the same time being taught what happens when a gunman comes into their school.
Yeah.
What a lockdown feels like.
Yeah. Isn't that awful? And is there anything that we're going to do to break through and change the dynamic of the situation anytime in the near future? And the answer is no.
You mentioned California. I want you to mention this other news item from California as well. It's fascinating.
Oh, yeah. That California has balanced its budget.
Can you believe that?
And is now operating, apparently, at least on paper, a surplus. I haven't read the California budget. I don't know if it's full of trickery and strange rounding errors and accounting tricks. But
well, they did raise taxes in their...
Yeah. They cut services and they raised taxes. But they finally got enough... Democrats apparently
they have a Democratic supermajority in the
to pass
to
what
pass
they wanted.
They can pass anything, right?
And you know, you can argue over what they should have done and what should have been cut and whether or not Jerry Brown should have taken the path he took. But the argument always was that see what happens when liberals run things.
Yeah, spendocrats.
California is ungovernable because of the crazy unions and the fact that Democrats don't want to pay their bills. Which is a fabulous argument from the party that, again, 12 years ago voted against budget surpluses on a national level. George W.
Away.
Bush. Let me repeat. George W. Bush ran against budget surpluses. Mm-hmm. It was in his acceptance speech 7 times at the Republican convention. It was in his advertising. He said, we have to get rid of these terrible, pesky, troublesome budget surpluses.
We celebrated Towel Day this week, Douglas Adams' birthday. And so I was looking up stuff about Douglas Adams. And in Life, the Universe, and Everything, Chapter 3, he has the theory of the SEP field, which is somebody else's problem.
Yeah.
Somebody else's problem is an actual field in this novel that can be thrown around an object or an issue that people don't want to deal with or that they can't conceive of as true. He uses the example of aliens at a soccer match. Huh. Just get the somebody else's problem field thrown over them. And the gun problem, domestic and gender violence, climate change, the need for tax and immigration reform. These days, our media covers those with an SEP field. There's no doubt about it.
We're not going to have those conversations.
We're not going to have this conversation. It's somebody else's problem. And discussing it is somebody else's problem. And so it's really helped me this week to realize that Morning Joe is a huge SEP field generator.
Oh, yeah.
That's their job.
Most of television is.
Yeah. Well, but Micah in the past month has spent 20 minutes talking about single women in Manhattan freezing their eggs. But she spent zero time talking about raising rich people's cap on Social Security taxes.
Well, yeah.
Because somebody else's problem. And this mass shooting thing, it appears to me, may never reach the threshold of being everybody's problem. It frustrates me no end that we can't get to the point. And I know you got really mad this week and said,
I did.
The only time it's going to become our problem is when rich, important people wind up getting shot or their kids wind up getting shot. And then all of a sudden it's a problem. First of all, I want to talk about this lovely Republican retreat.
Yes.
I'm so sorry. I'm not down in Virginia to be a fly on the wall at this thing. The Republican Party is working on rebranding itself.
Yes.
I guess like New Coke.
Yeah.
And they had a meeting with the Domino CEO to show them how the Domino CEO was going to talk to them.
Yeah. Just, well, step one, first of all, have you considered free crazy bread with every vote? Because the one thing you're not allowed to do, again, the one thing you're absolutely not allowed to do is point out the fact that some people in this room are crazy.
Yeah. And that there's a real problem with our ideas and there's a real problem with how we govern.
yeah.
rather than just the brand.
Yeah.
There's a real problem with Republican candidates who can't stop talking about rape.
Rape,
and women's vaginas needing to be locked up. Mm-hmm. So.
This is in the DNA. You can't market way around that. If you go back to the good old days of 1994, when Newt Gingrich on the inside and Rush Limbaugh on the outside. And let's pause for a moment to remember Rush Limbaugh has been on the air now for a quarter of a century.
Unbelievable.
And Rush Limbaugh's message hasn't changed substantially in that period of time. And the Republican Party threw a virtual parade for Rush Limbaugh in 1994. They called him the majority maker.
Yes.
One Republican leader after another credited him with their congressional victory. So when you hear conservatives say he's just an entertainer,
they had him on the House floor and handed him a plaque.
Yeah. And the plaque said majority maker.
Yep.
And you had a whole bunch of Republicans lining up to kiss his ring. This is back when Rush Limbaugh had a television career. Before he started before he had an audience and started saying crazy racist shit that people in his audience would catch him on, and then he would sweat like the pig that knows it's dinner. So, but this is a long time ago. This is a long, long time ago in political years. And during that presentation, during the celebration, because Republican celebrations always have to be mean. They always have to be sour.
Yeah.
So this one silly woman, I can't remember her name, was standing up about, and X number of congressional women, congressional Republicans, strong congressional Republicans have won seats, and not a feminazi in the bunch.
Oh my gosh.
So let's remember that this language for describing women who don't like to have their vaginas controlled by old white men as a feminazi, as a castrating.
Well, and that's something that Lisa Murkowski has been trying to kind of explain. No, actually, you have to pass the Violence Against Women Act if you want to be considered.
Yeah.
If you want to be considered women supporting in any way.
Yeah.
And did you hear yet about the special little convo they've had this weekend? They're having this thing at Williamsburg, Colonial Williamsburg, Virginia, and so their convo on communicating with minorities and women is at the Burwell Plantation.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think it's at the big house or one of the little houses? I think it's probably up at the big house.
I think it's probably up at the big house. Don't you think? Juleps and some big fans waving. You know, maybe they could get some of those African Americans to wave a few big fans over them to keep them cool.
Yeah.
And then they could find out how to communicate with them.
You know, I just
bring me another mint julep.
at some point in every decision making process, this thing has to pass through like 9 hands.
Yeah.
And at no point in this discussion did somebody say, do you really want to hold the discussion about sensitivity to women and minorities at a fucking plantation? Do you really think that's a good idea? At no point did anybody say.
People that apparently broke the story as being unbelievably dense was National Review Online, who is not, to me, known as the guys in the front of the room pointing everyone in the right direction.
One more time, this is the tribe that rubs shit in their hair.
Yeah.
They cannot understand why people are offended by their stupid racist jokes and their stupid sexist jokes. And they cannot fathom. This goes back to Matt Taibbi's Tea and Crackers article about his direct reporting, spending time with Tea Party members in, I think it was Kentucky.
Yeah.
And talking to them and listening to them and getting the people on Social Security, the people that worked for the government, bitching about government spending, people whose entire life depended on government checks, bitching about other people getting government money and being not at all ashamed of that inconsistency. And he said, it wasn't their racism that blew me away. It was their jaw-dropping narcissism that they had no idea that the shit that was coming out of their mouth was offensive. They had no clue that their very existence, their vocabulary, how they viewed the world was the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's no way to put crazy bread around that and sell it with some extra dipping sauce and pretend it's otherwise. The object of anyone who disagrees with me is either coerced into doing so or is arguing in bad faith is a strategy designed to make sure I don't have to deal with my critics.
Yep,
And I don't have to deal with anybody who doesn't agree with me already.
You call it Langenwald syndrome, and you're very close to being right about that. Yeah.
I do. It is a very simple strategy that says you don't get into my clubhouse to have this conversation about race or conversation about culture, but conversation about anything without first agreeing that you agree with me on everything all the time. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I don't agree with you. That's why we're having a conversation. That's why it's not a monologue where I'm just nodding.
Yeah.
And so be when you're having these conversations, it doesn't mean people who disagree with you aren't necessarily disagreeing with you in bad faith.
Right.
But people who disagree with you strategically to try to deflect you from having the important conversation, which is how do we get our culture to value and cherish women?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we get our culture to be less violent? And how do we get guns out of the hands of lunatics? Those are the topic sentences.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who wants to say, yeah, but we should talk about all human conditions. And then we'll eventually get around to your subject. Or, I'm sorry, we're only going to talk about drones, period. That's the only thing that matters. People who approach any conversation with those two mindsets are not going to ever agree with you. They're anxious to take your energy and your power and your passion and divert it into their cause or deflect it from changing their status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And just be apprised of it. That's all. And everything rolls along fine. This is what I observed in Chicago. Everything rolls along fine until the money runs out.
Yep. Yeah.
So resources start drying up.
Yep.
And that's when you see who's in and who's not.
Yep.
Who's got connections and who doesn't. And in this case, you really do see that the people who have been fronting the cash for the Republican Revolution for 40 years are now shortening the leash so tight that they can't breathe anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You will come out for absolute unlimited access to firepower for everyone, or we will kill you. Yeah. You will come out for absolute deregulation of everything all the time. You will regulate the fuck out of women's vaginas, or we'll cut you off.
Yeah.
And the hidden hand of the corporate overlords, of the crackpot right-wing billionaires who run the show, is no longer hidden. It's out in plain view.
Yep.
And that's where things start to flake out.
And there are men out there, not killers, not rapists, who in their daily walk around life feel entitled to women's bodies in all kinds of inappropriate ways. And you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the asshole whisperer.
No.
I'm not here to fix that.
And now the day has come, and that brings us around probably to.
Well, I wanted you to talk about the most dangerous graphs in America in relation to that, because
the most
perfectly germane to that,
are currently available on driftclass.blogspot.com. But there's a I'm going to blow the name, and it's short, but it's View Vote or Vote View. It's an organization that has tracked the voting outcomes in terms of ideology over the last, 150 years or whatever, congressional voting. And some of you might remember that a year ago, I did a little post on 1972, that the central argument for centrism, for the big lie of centrism, for the big lie of both sides do it is, well, you know, at one point in time, there were two parties, there was a center left and a center right. And since whatever, pick a point in time, the left has rocketed off to the extreme, extreme, extreme left, and the right has skyrocketed off to the right, right, right. And only the sensible, sane, serious people are still in the middle trying to get these two extreme, partisan, opposite, polar, ridiculously offensive and intractable groups to work together. And yet when you look at the actual record, when you look at party platform of the Democratic Party in 1972 and compare it to 2012 – there's no change. The party hasn't moved right at all. It hasn't moved left at all. It's moved right in a lot of ways. It's drifted, you know, disturbingly right from my liberal point of view. But it certainly hasn't gone left. If it had gone left from 1972, we would be in a full-on socialist system.
Nationalize the banks.
Nationalize everything. Yeah. We don't have that. Pot would be legal and plentifully available. There would be no God on the money. There, you know, all of those things would now be true. Except none of those are true. None of those are even up for discussion. But the right has gone crazy ass right. The right really has gone from Nixon's time, from the 60s and 70s to now. The right has just blazed new trails into crazy town. And I put up a graphic. It wasn't a true chart, but it was my impression of here's the line of where the left has actually gone. Here's the line of where the right has actually gone. And here's the right where the imaginary left that the Beltway press constantly obsesses over insists that the left really is over here. Because if you're in the center, it only makes sense to be a centrist if you believe that both sides really are equally extreme. And so it's imperative that you create a completely fictional liberalism that doesn't exist at all, that's a fairy tale, that's a David Brooks, David Gregory fairy tale, to counterbalance the true psychotic right. That way you can continue to pretend that the center is the place you want to be. Well, this vote organization did actual they used science, you know, fancy that. They used science and counted votes and said, no, since about the mid-70s, way to go, Driftglass. Since about the mid-70s, the Democratic Party has remained pretty static. Their votes have been remained remarkably consistent. It's just a flat line, pretty much a flat line. The right, however, has just zoomed off into Crazyville, has just gone. And the reason this is the most dangerous graph in America is the central lie of the Beltway media is and always has been both sides do it.
The court, the Supreme Court, has upheld the restraining order against the Republican Party for interfering in elections. Reince Priebus wants to make it so that Electoral College votes are assigned by whether you win a congressional district or not.
Yeah.
Because that'll guarantee them a win pretty much. So that'll work.
Yeah, I don't know if you all have had this experience. I know I have had a direct personal experience with someone who's doing an adversarial party doing a PowerPoint presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going through their graphics and they're making this point and this point. And then you realize, wait a minute, this graph of all the possible representations of the data that they could have chosen, they chose the one that most screws me over and makes them look good.
Yep.
And that's when you raise your hand and go, wait a minute. Yeah, I realize I live in Chicago and my organization essentially encompasses whatever, theoretically, at least 4 million people. And you live in Podunk. But when did we decide to change to geographical representation? Square miles. We're going to base our dues on square miles rather than and suddenly the conversation comes to a halt because what was supposed to be an objective analysis of the future of organizations has pretty clearly turned into, okay, we're kind of screwed, so we need to rig this so it'll come out the way we want to. Yep. And when you catch them doing that mid-sentence, it's kind of embarrassing. And you go down the list. Okay, the demonizing Acorn didn't work. Mm-hmm. And the new Black Panther Party didn't work. And creating new barriers to registration didn't work. And taking, you know, misallocating voting machines so that minority districts have vastly fewer machines didn't work. And cutting early voting down didn't work. What else can we do to cheat our way into power?
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, that is the way the conversation is never framed at the national level. Because you're not allowed to point out the fact that one side of this equation are lying, cheating, corrupt douchebags. Mm-hmm. Not that my side wins any prizes for purity, but there is no symmetry in this. We don't have a spending problem in this country, a deficit problem in this country. We don't have a communication problem or a partisan problem. We have a Republican problem. Watch and fun to listen to, but I'm not highly focused on this because I'm an obsessive person or because it amuses me, although both of those things are actually true. But I'm highly focused on it because I'm absolutely convinced that the big lie of centrism, the big lie both sides do it, is the pillar that holds up the entire establishment. And if that lie is ever challenged, because it's the lie that makes every other lie possible. Scratch a Republican, scratch a conservative, watch a conservative. Every single time one of their lies blows up in their face, every single time you debunk them, the immediate next words out of their mouth are, yeah, but what about Huffington Post? What about Al Gore? Whether it has anything to do with the topic or not, they find some imaginary group of liberals far away and try to divert the conversation to, well, yeah, but liberals are equally wrong about everything. So conservative, that is the absolute fallback, last ditch spider hole position of every conservative. And it's the bread and butter of every centrist douchebag from David Gregory to David Brooks in the media. And once that lie gets exposed, once that balloon pops, there's no place for them to hide.
I want to talk about Clive Bundy.
Okay.
Because he's an independent now.
He's an independent.
I changed my voting registration to independent. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. I haven't voted for anyone who wasn't a Republican since...
Dewey. And I even voted for that socialist Nixon.
Nixon.
And again,
with his free milk for poor people.
Uh-huh. But I don't blame Clive and Bundy for trying to get out of the hole he has suddenly found himself in. Mm-hmm. He thought what he was doing was fine and righteous and everybody had his back. Mm-hmm. And then it all blew up in his face. And rather than what he did was what Republicans do, was just run away. Run away, pretend I was never there. La, 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 la. Yeah. And
again, Fox News ran away and pretended he was never on their show. Hannity? Heard of him.
But that strategy, that what I have called in the past strategic forgettery, mm-hmm. it just never happened. So let's move on. I'll quote Don Draper again. You know, the Republican memory moves in one direction, forward, period. They never look back. Because back there is full of crazy shit that I said last week that I don't want to be held to account to, because it turned out it was all a bunch of lies that Sean Hannity fed. Mm. So who can blame Clive Bundy for saying, I'm an independent now, so none of that counts. La, 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 I'm not a Republican. Hey, Sean Hannity is a conservative. He's not a Republican. Ask him. He's not a conservative. He's not a Republican. He's a conservative because he registered with the Conservative Party in New York. Well, you can register whatever you want, man, but you are the biggest Republican testicle cozy in America. And the idea that he can smirk and pretend that he's really not because I have this itty-bitty fig leaf, and that anybody who says otherwise is somehow exaggerating or lying or arguing in bad faith. The idea that you would ever get into an argument with these douchebags about what they call themselves is stupid. And that's where the press falls apart, because they keep falling for this bullshit that, hey, look, that guy over there changed his hat. He must be a different guy altogether. Mm-hmm. No, he's not. It's mm-hmm. the same assholes who were the same assholes they were a month ago and a year ago and 10 years ago and 30 years ago. You just keep pretending they're not. And we on the left keep yelling about it. By the way, hat tip to, what's his name again? Barack?
Obama?
Obama, that's his
yeah.
name.
Yeah.
Kenyan usurper.
He came out this week saying both sides don't.
Both sides don't, and the media is the problem.
Yep. But you know who else says the media is the problem? Michael Grimm.
He does. He does, but he doesn't see it in the same way. Barack Obama, this last week, finally went where liberals have been for a decade.
Decade, exactly.
Which is, no, the problem is, A, this fucking false equivalency, and B, that the media keeps collaborating with this big lie.
Just say both sides.
Yeah, it's easy for Clive and Bundy or fake journalists like Sean Hannity to say this because that's what gets them what they want, which is, you promise to punish both sides. If I fuck up, great, I'm going to fuck up more. Yeah. Look how badly we broke government. Isn't government awful? And every time they get caught doing it, it's both sides, both sides. Mm-hmm. But that poison has seeped into the well water and is now just everywhere. So the idea that the president of the United States is once again stealing my shtick. Once again, borrowing from my blog or borrowing from our blogs is hilarious and complimentary. And it's also a testament to the fact.
A little frustrating.
And it's a testament to the fact that he never has to run for office again.
Yeah.
Because now he can say stuff that. Like that. Yeah. Like, you know, mm-hmm. no, David mm-hmm. Gregg, I keep waiting for him to say, yeah, David Gregg was a douchebag.
Yep.
I don't know why the hell he still has a show. Give that Ronan Farrow a shot.
But, you know, this is why he's not going to say that.
No.
I do want to talk for a minute about Michael Grimm for that same reason, which yeah. is this both sides situation then leads people to distrust the media. And then Michael Grimm can come out and say, yeah, see, the media is terrible.
Media is terrible. Can't you see? It's so
clear.
Can't you
see? They're getting me for being both a bully and a tax cheat. Uh-huh. And it's the media's fault.
Yeah.
For focusing on the negative.
You keep focusing on the can of gasoline and the lighter in my hand rather than the fire, which is what you're supposed to be paying attention to. Yeah. You're right. We're doing that because effects have causes. And I know that violates your contempt for science.
Yeah.
That, you know, things lead to other things, and there's a thing called causality in history and the past and facts and shit. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of us, standing outside this increasingly weird circle of cultists. It is so strange. Mm-hmm. It would be a tragicomedy if this were happening on a faraway little island someplace where we could sort of laugh it off. Or isn't it weird that the natives are behaving this way? Or isn't it strange this alien planet believes this silly shit? But these people are the ones who are dragging us into the abyss.
And that article that I mentioned, I highly recommend it to everyone about how this is not an ideology. This is corruption.
Yeah.
And when you realize that the questions that are being asked, I mean, that's how this was framed. The questions being asked at the president's press conference, no one was asking about climate change. No one was asking about how people are dying from cigarettes. No one was asking about the health of the American people. There are all kinds of things that are not being asked about because the framers of the questions, as you've said, are the problem.
Either they refuse to think outside of their corrupt, moneyed positions, or they have, and this is even more tragic, they have so inculcated, they have so ingested their own bullshit that they can't think anymore any other way.
Well, and they're surrounded by people who are exactly like them, and yeah. It's very insular. And if that's the case, you know, if you're attending any kind of institution, we all know institutions like this, churches, universities, civic groups, where they're just so insular that they don't see how weird they are.
Yeah, and they see that there's a problem.
Yeah.
And I've been through that management session in many different organizations where there is clearly some big steaming lump of something that that senior management is simply not going to fucking talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you broach the subject, meeting adjourned.
Yep.
And your manager will come to you and say, you know, maybe you don't understand that we don't talk about that shit here because you haven't figured that out. But by the same token, they want the effect of a circulatory system, but they don't want to talk about the failing heart.
Yep. Yep.
Can't you just make it as if things were healthy and normal? No, because they're not. No. And you can't have effect without the cause. So sorry, you're gonna have to fix what's wrong. And what's wrong is you.
And the fact that he used his perception of sexual rejection to kill other people is really immaterial, because the guy who shot up the Sikh temple in Wisconsin also had some perception.
Right.
That was his excuse to kill.
Right.
You know, what was the perception that led to Sandy Hook? Was it, you know, the kindergarten jihad was out to get me? No, that's a crazy person.
There's a certain dark hilarity to the fact that clearly these people never saw The Sorcerer's Apprentice and never read Gollum and never read Frankenstein and never listened to any cautionary tale about you really shouldn't build monsters that you can't control and then turn them loose, because that's really, you know, Abby something. What?
Abby Normal. Really?
What? Put Jerry Falwell's brain in the Republican Party? Yeah, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And we won some elections. And well, yeah, but now it's running amok through the countryside and killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't pretend you didn't create it, because now it's coming after you. And the hilarious, tragic part is, again, there were a lot of people standing on the sidelines who were smart enough and observant enough to say, you will fucking live to regret this. Pardon, I'm using that F word a lot today.
That's all right. But you know what?
You will live to regret this.
We know who those people are. They're called liberals.
Bible bitch.
That's not scriptural.
I have been reading Hilary Mantel's Wolf Hall, which is about Henry VIII and Thomas Cromwell, and it's a very well-written novel. But there's a section in the beginning of the book where the old cardinal is talking about the Bible, and he says...
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the second Henry VIII reference we've made in this podcast?
Probably.
Awesome! We're awesome! All right, never mind.
The old cardinal says about the Bible, you read it, you'll be surprised by what's not in it.
And isn't that the truth? Yeah.
And then he says, show me where it says purgatory, relics, monks, nuns. Show me where it says Pope. You know, and that's just, it's showing so clearly how insulated this cardinal is from any danger at all.
Right. You can say things.
He can say things all he wants because he's safe. So we were talking about Yes All Women, the hashtag, you and I.
Yes, we were.
And you said, yeah, you Bible Bitch should have something to say about this. And I said, you mean the virtuous woman? And you said, who?
That's right.
No, no, the virtuous woman,
which
is in Proverbs.
I think you're virtuous, but I think it's a little, you know, prideful to be saying call yourself that. But no, you mean the virtuous woman.
In Proverbs, there is a chapter about outlining the virtuous woman. Who is the virtuous woman? And I'm reading this from The Message, which is a modern translation. And this is just a segment of it.
She is, of course, completely quiet and subservient and...
No.
Oh, no? Really?
No.
Oh, that's weird. What,
no. What? She does need a work in sewing and knitting and things like that. But I'm going to read a passage from Proverbs 31.
Okay.
A good woman is hard to find and worth far more than diamonds. Her husband trusts her without reserve and never has reason to regret it. Never spiteful, she treats him generously all her life long. She looks over a field and buys it. Then, with money she's put aside, she plants a garden. First thing in the morning, she dresses for work, rolls up her sleeves, eager to get started. She senses the worth of her work and is in no hurry to call it quits for the day. She's quick to assist anyone in need, reaches out to help the poor. She designs gowns and sells them, brings the sweaters she knits to the dress shops. Her clothes are well-made and elegant, and she always faces tomorrow with a smile. She's a businesswoman.
Yeah, she sure is.
And, you know.
And a good one, too.
She buys land. She sells her handmade goods. And her husband trusts her.
And is proud of her.
As I paraphrase my favorite T-shirt in my closet, my Christian feminist dialectic brings all the boys to the yard.
If they're grown-ups.
Yeah.
If they're big boys. Every group of thugs who walks into an Applebee's with their AK slung over their shoulder is sending one message, and that's or else.
Yeah.
Don't make me use this.
Yeah.
Because... frankly, these are cowards who can't win an argument without carrying a gun.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand the Constitution. They don't respect the Constitution. The conservative Constitution is yada, 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 guns, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Not even a well-regulated militia. And there is no amount of talking to these people, reasoning with them, that's going to change their mind. That's what I got really mad about this week. You had... people desperately pretending that the Southern strategy didn't exist. And this is all just a dream in your liberal imagination.
Yeah.
But now we're 30, 40 years into this experiment. And now the bones are sticking through the skin and the lesions are gaping open and oozing all over the place. And you can't pretend it's not happening anymore. And the most fascinating people in this equation are not the dumb fucks who booked a sensitivity course at a plantation mm-hmm. who were Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
The most fascinating people of all to me, and we'll get to this in a little bit, are the people who still derive their living by pretending it's not happening.
Yep.
Those are the ones that are fascinating because those are the ones who are consciously, they get up in the morning, they look at themselves in the mirror, they go, okay, how am I going to lie to the American people today?
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
my job is to put lipstick on this fucking pig, to put perfume on this turd, and it's stinking now, it's rotting now, and yet I cannot acknowledge it or I lose my cushy job. So what combination of words and misdirection am I going to use to lie to the American people today?
It is estimated by law enforcement that alcohol is involved in half of all murders in this country. And a third of all suicides. Alcohol is what breaks down your inhibition to kill yourself.
Yeah, I would imagine part of that is chronic depression caused or exacerbated by self-medication.
Yep.
And the second would be the thing that alcohol does is it drops your impulse control.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You lose your inhibition. And one of those inhibitions might be, you know what? I'm stepping off the ledge.
Yeah.
I've got this thing in my hand that will end my life if I just pull a trigger.
It's really important to teach young people to watch out for that. If your roommate's drinking a lot, I'm going to tell my daughters, if your roommate's drinking a lot, she might be depressed. She might be self-medicating.
Mm-hmm.
Get somebody to help you, help her. You know, the kind of protection that Congress and the Supreme Court and the White House have within the framework of D.C. gun laws is unparalleled.
Yeah.
And no one talks about let's weaken D.C. gun laws so that people can do concealed carry in the Supreme Court building, because that would be a good idea.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about that.
Oh.
You know, nobody wants concealed carried hippies walking around Scalia, right? I mean,
or Black Panthers,
or Black Panther. Yeah, the new Black Panther Party might have tried to walk around. You know, there's in D.C. there's a lot of disenfranchised African American voters. Yeah. So,
well, and everyone here probably recalls that some of the earliest state level gun control in California was proposed and enacted because Black people started showing up in numbers with guns.
Legislative sessions.
Yeah. They started showing up saying, no, this is the Constitution and we're allowed to do this. And nothing so terrifies the heart of a white racist or a white racist, someone who wants to profit from that racism like Ronald Reagan did for his entire career, than the sight of a well-regulated militia full of Black people with guns showing up at a public event going, no, this is, you know,
this is we're Second Amendment.
And they changed those laws so fast, make your head spin.
Well, and I'd love to see, and we're going to talk about Tom Hartman's article too, but I'd love to, if I had $1 million to flush down the toilet, I'd love to just buy NRA membership for like 2 million Black people.
Yeah.
You know, just see what happens. Go to the next convention. Every armed Black people all everywhere, you know, and see how the NRA reacted to that. But he starts off, the first three lectures of the first 3 weeks are about the decay of civility and humility since 1950.
Yeah.
And how it's the hippies' fault. I mean, it really comes across very clear that this Yale course, which is only going to have 20 students, by the way.
It is proven beyond any doubt, given Mr. Brooks's column in The New York Times today, his conversation with Gail Collins.
Oh, this is on Thursday's paper?
Wednesday paper,
okay.
When she asked him, do you really think that there is, as Colin Powell said, a dark vein of intolerance running through the right, running through the Republican Party? He said, no, that's not true at all. In fact, Democrats are much more intolerant than Republicans. I go to lots of secret meetings with Democrats and Republicans, and Democrats are always more intolerant than Republicans. And this is not the first time he's told this lie. He's told a lie about Reagan and how Reagan never ran a racist campaign. Reagan never did any such thing. And he has been raked over the coals and beaten up in the press repeatedly for this particular kind of lie. Mm-hmm. But if you read him sort of on a semi-regular basis like I do, and you see the kind of things he writes about obsessively, he is really and truly involved in a massive project to completely rewrite the last history of the last 50 years of conservatism and turn it into a fairy tale about noble Whigs navigating through treacherous hippie country, being guided by the noble and humble David Brooks. And there's this big secret club of people whose lives have been ruined by guns.
Yep.
And they have no constituency. They have no NRA behind them. They have no funding from the Koch brothers.
Right.
They are busy grieving, most of them, or getting on with their lives or trying to stitch up their wounds.
Yep.
And there simply is no masked, focused, hysterical, well-funded lunatic. I'm sorry, lunatic's the wrong word. Fanatic on this side of the issue to match Wayne LaPierre. And it will stay this way.
And Michael Bloomberg's trying.
Yeah.
But it's not the same because he's not willing to lie outrageously to get his point across.
He's not willing to go down into the sewer where the base of the Republican Party lives and tell them that the Kenyan usurper is coming to steal your guns because he wants to socialize your country and turn your kid gay.
Yep.
And he is a secret plan to take to disarm this country so he can turn you over and turn you into slaves.
Yep.
There's nobody on the left who is capable of raising an army that's as fanatical and as lunatic and as destructive and as openly hostile and carries fucking guns as the NRA.
Yep.
And until, honest to God, until Joe Scarborough is terrified to go out in public, then this ain't going to change.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but if I'm sitting there trying to have a protest, trying to have a conversation, and 12 guys show up strapped and look and trying to intimidate because they have fucking guns, that changes the way the conversation goes. I overheard my senator, Dick Durbin say something that eerily sounded like Driftglass on the radio this morning, because he actually lives down here and he goes on the radio every now and then, talking about how, the VA is broken and it's awful and it sucks, but we dumped 2 million new veterans into it.
Yep.
And a bunch of Vietnam veterans who weren't getting treated, and a bunch of veterans who had depression. So we loaded up this system that was already bursting at the seams with a whole bunch of new people and never funded it correctly. And then we overlaid it with this bureaucratic mandate that you're just going to make it work. And if you've ever been inside of a project where you it's clear you don't have anything like the resources you need to do anything remotely approaching your objective, and the person at the top says you get no more anything, but you have to fulfill these impossible deadlines, you are dooming that to failure. And the only question is exactly how does that failure manifest itself this time, because it will always fail.
Just as a footnote to your VA. Footnote to your VA footnote. Bernie Sanders also said today, we don't have a VA problem. We have a war problem.
Yes.
And
exactly.
Let's face it, when you have a Defense Department that cannot be audited because it's too big and has too many computer systems that have all been contracted out that don't talk to each other, and you have a Republican Party, yes, I'm talking about you, Paul Ryan, who leaves the Defense Department off of every budget consideration, but the VA can be cut and privatized. I can't wait. I'm with Chris Hayes on this. I can't wait till the Republicans say the solution to the VA problem is to privatize it.
Yeah, because you want to know what happens then?
Want to watch people get really mad? You want to watch people who are potential teabaggers?
You want to watch people with guns suddenly on your side of the issue?
Talk about privatizing the VA.
Everyone look up the bonus army and
All right. Exactly. We angry vets. Let's make them angrier. Okay. Yeah,
that's a good idea. No.
All right. One last thing. We have a letter from one of our listeners named Helen, and this came in the post office box today.
Today.
Thank you for going to the post office box.
You're welcome. I had to push a lot of old ladies out of the way to get to the post office. But it was worth it because we got this letter from Helen.
And Helen is in New York State, and we're very grateful to her. She sent us a contribution, and thank you very much. Dear Driftglass and Blue Gal, I send this holiday gift to you and your children with a boatload of love and support, and also with a bit of embarrassment. You see, I have been listening to and reading you both for years, and I have been doing it for free, although once or twice I threw Driftglass a few shekels. But really, I have been lax, and for that I apologize. I have no excuse. My impetus for finally writing is that I have finally come to the realization that all you say is true, not politically, that is a given, but also personally. My background story is long and very different than most people, but the upshot is that I have finally ended a relationship with a cousin slash friend that lasted close to 50 years. I have kept my mouth shut for too long. It was killing me inside. I tried to use your vocabulary, and for that I thank you. I am a New Yorker, and fuck is my favorite word, although oddly, it never helped me win an argument.
It never does.
Never does. So I finally asked my cousin in an email to help me understand the rights philosophy. I worded the question very carefully. No politics involved, I told her, but please tell me what you are thinking. And do you know what happened? Can you guess what happened, Driftglass? Guess the ending of this incident.
I think it ended well.
No. The vile, vindictive shit she wrote back was fascinating. It was also full of lies and incorrect information. Hey, did you guys know Obama bailed out the banks?
He did. It's true.
She is a true wingnut playing the victim game. The last victim straw was when she insulted my mother. According to her, I was way luckier than she was because when I was 12 years old, my mother died. That's right. A dead mother makes you strong.
Yeah.
And that is why I have been more successful than her.
Yeah.
I should count my lucky stars that my mother was not around to ruin my life. Which, according to my cousin, she most certainly would have.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, this sounds like a Rand Paul disciple.
Well, this sounds like a...
My dad was dead.
Yeah. Which Southern Gothic novelist wrote
this? Honestly. I am sorry, Helen. Believe me, I am sorry that this happened to you.
Yeah.
Driftglass is right. You cannot change these people's minds with numbers and stats and truth. I thought I could, but believe me, I gave all those stats to her in that email. She did not care. The stats were all fake. She lives in a world where whatever makes her feel better about herself and makes her feel better than the others is her truth.
Yeah.
I know her life. Her truth has nothing to do with reality. Still, my heart is broken at the loss of her. But further still, I am not sorry that I ended the relationship. It took all the strength I had, and the two of you helped me find that strength. There is polluted air, and there is clean air, and she is polluted air. I cannot breathe it anymore.
Yeah.
So I thank you for your truth and for all that you do, and have a lovely, lovely holiday. I send you loves and kisses and hopefully jobs.
Yay!
Signed, Helen. P.S. I wrote the check in Fran's name because I was not sure that you could cash a check written out to the professional left. Thank you, but yes, we can. Either way is fine, but and certainly we can deposit this in the right account and make sure it gets accounted for. But anyone that makes out a check to professional left, we have an account that will handle that. Either way, thank you very much, Helen.
Thank you, Helen.
Contributions really appreciated, and your letter is amazing. And yes, I am so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry. I understand where she's coming from. And a lot of strength to do that. It really does.
It really, and I won't belabor the point, but I tuned in some of that polluted air.
You did.
On running errands today. Just spinning out for a couple of errands. Had to pick some stuff up and listen to Boss Rush Limbaugh, for 5 minutes. And it was all about how they hate America. They think they're America. They're not America. They're not Americans. The left is made up of academicians and pointy-headed communists who think they can run car companies and think but they've never done anything in their lives. They're lazy. They're dilettantes. That's why Pajama Boy, because they think America looks like that, but America doesn't look like that. And they keep interfering with your life, and they keep controlling things, and they keep taking things away from you. And then we're off to John Kerry land.
Yeah.
And what a fake hunter he is. And it is this horrid, constant barrage of identity politics, and how those people, those intellectuals, those college professors and academics and policy wonks who've never done a real job in their whole life, says the guy who loads up his suitcase and takes sex holidays, it never stops. It's so consuming and toxic and self-contained that at some point you just have to step away from it. So I'm glad you could do that, Helen. I'm really sorry for your loss, but I'm glad you did it.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's fresh internet kitty is Dakota. Dakota is a classic barn cat, and he guards his barn with gravitas. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. In addition to flood insurance, we also need more internet kitties, so feel free to send some in. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air, unless you say otherwise.
And a note about unions, if this is our Labor Day weekend show.
Hey, so, it is.
Hats Happy off to Labor workers Day. Everywhere, you know.
Workers of the world, absolutely.
Don't let the bastards get you down. So, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
How are the internet kitties doing this week?
The internet kitties say happy birthday to Crooks and Liars, which turns 10 years old this weekend. Can you believe that?
Happy birthday, Crooks and Liars.
Crooks and Liars. In internet years, that's like a billion years.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University comes from a website called frankwu.com. He's got trivia quizzes up. And this one is the first lines of science fiction short stories. No novels. These could be challenging, but maybe not for the science fiction expert. We shall see.
When I meet her, I will ask her. But for now, you're stuck with me.
All right. Number one. This is the first couple of sentences, one sentence, whatever he's decided to do.
Okay.
And you have to tell me the author and the name of the short story.
All right. Well, okay.
Number one, lightning was drawn to the spot, season after season, August to November, but most heavily in September. the jagged killing bolts sought out George Gibbrey's orchard.
Okay. First of all, the irony of that being tonight.
Being the first one when we are flooded out very funny.
We'll tell you more at the end of the podcast.
We're telling you more about that during the podcast, yes.
Yeah, it's good timing there, Harlan Ellison.
The good news is, as you said, we have beachfront property.
Yeah, right, we do. Now. We do. And I have I have laid up enough water in my car to last me a month. And we have a little lake in the basement too. So I am
we'll be doing a Kickstarter to get our basement waterproofed, let me tell you.
Yeah, it's bad.
We promise.
It's bad, and it's happening now. I mean, this is literally happening as we're sitting here talking. So but this is a respite from what is a fairly weird and troubling turn of events. But yeah, the irony that Harlan Ellison's story about Prometheus would be the first one about lightning striking and destruction. I think it was in the Deathbird stories, but I can't remember the title of it.
It's On the Slab.
On the Slab, yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, great ending to that story, too. Good story, good all the way around.
Good story. Harlan Ellison, On the Slab. Number two, George, I wish you'd look at the nursery.
Oh, that's easy. Everybody knows that.
Oh.
That's Ray Bradbury.
Yes, it is.
Writing a horror story, basically. The Veldt.
Yes, you're right.
Story from about wall-sized television sets written a long time before there were any such things. Yeah.
He wrote other stories about television screens.
Yes, he did. Giant television screens that interacted with you.
And may I say that victory is yours, Driftglass, in that Middlechild is now reading Fahrenheit 451.
What?
Yes, and she wonders why Montag's wife wants a fourth screen.
Yeah.
Why does she want one? She's got three.
Yeah, no, she needs four.
Oh.
So she can fully immerse herself in the story and that interacts with her and it calls her by name.
Yes.
And then she'll never come out.
And why did she take so many pills?
Yeah. Good question.
Because her life is really terrible.
Yeah.
That's why.
So, yeah, this is the Veldt.
Yeah, and I love that she's reading the book before she sees the movie. It's one of my favorite science fiction movies. But
it's a wonderful book. And of course, ironically, banned in lots of places.
All right. Number three, 98, 99, 100. Gloria withdrew her chubby little forearm from before her eyes and stood for a moment, wrinkling her nose and blinking in the sunlight.
I have no idea. It's not even familiar, but...
It is a story called Robbie, and it's by Isaac Asimov.
Okay. Yeah. It didn't... Wow. Okay.
Number four. Juliet entered her bedroom smiling, and 1,000 Juliets smiled back at her.
See... this has the stink, or I should say the aroma,
the
perfume of Harlan Ellison. But I don't think Harlan Ellison didn't write it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a collection of stories or something he did with a bunch of stories about Jack the Ripper.
Oh.
And I don't know. This has got to be. I think I know this is one of those. I just don't know what the title is.
It's Robert Bloch, A Toy for Juliet.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
Is it in that collection, you think?
I bet it is. I will bet you dollars. Or it's either in that or the Dangerous Visions collection. Or, of course, Ellison republishes a lot of his stories over and over again. So
okay. Well, this one's by Robert Bloch. But Harlan Ellison does invite other writers to his party. And publishes collections of anthologies.
Famous anthologies. Yeah. The Dangerous Visions stuff were him. And I think Bloch also did Psycho.
Ooh, okay.
And a bunch of other. He's a wonderful gentleman, or was a wonderful gentleman. I don't know if he's still alive or not. With the, I believe he said, "I have the heart of an 8-year-old child, and I keep it in a jar by my bed." So he's that guy.
Number five, Un and Sub, the giants are grinding him for food. I'm going to give you the author.
Okay.
Philip Jose Farmer.
Okay. All right. And if it's a short story, I'm doing this a little bit by deduction. Philip Jose Farmer, I believe, lives in Illinois.
Oh.
I think he lives or lived in Peoria. I could be wrong about that.
He's probably flooded
by now. No, writers live on mountaintops. They're never troubled by weather or illness or anything else.
What you just said.
Yeah, I know. I'm just a scribbler. Philip Jose Farmer, I'm guessing it's Writers of the Purple Wage.
That's right.
Which is a riff on Zane Grey's Writers of the Purple Sage. And also, I believe the very first time it appeared was one of the Dangerous Visions collections by Harlan Ellison.
Oh.
So.
Everything goes back to Harlan. That's why he did it.
It's
so
possible.
Everything would go back to him.
It's possible. These are just all the first sentences from let me just get that anthology out. I'll be much smarter if I have it.
You mean they just took all the first sentences from one anthology, do you think?
I don't know, but.
That would be funny.
But I had that anthology, but it was in the basement.
Oh, no. See, yeah. Wouldn't that be ironic? Okay.
Yeah.
Number six. Mr. John Philip Johnson shut his front door behind him and came down his front steps into the bright morning with a feeling that all was well with the world on this best of all days. And wasn't the sun warm and good? And didn't his shoes feel comfortable after the resoling? And he knew that he had undoubtedly chosen the precise very tie which belonged with the day and the sun and his comfortable feet. And after all, wasn't the world just a wonderful place?
Okay, so this is not Harlan Ellison's anthology. This is an old story. This is, I'm going to get the title a little bit wrong, I'm sure, but I really love this story. It's One Ordinary Day with Peanuts.
No, that's the title. Yeah.
Okay, all right. And if you haven't read it, go read it. I'm not going to tell you how it ends. I think it was written by the same woman who wrote The Lottery.
Yes, Shirley Jackson.
Yeah, it has that surreal, interesting quality about it, but it's a wonderful story. And I think we read it first in like fifth or sixth grade, which is starting to be a long time ago.
Yeah. So. Number seven. The light was so bad in the bar that everyone there looked like they had been painted by Thomas Hart Benton or carved from dirty bars of soap with rusty spoons.
Jeez.
That is just a great sentence.
That is. You know, when I think bar in science fiction, I go to Spider Robinson. But yeah, his bar, it is.
It could be science. It could be Spider Robinson. It is not Spider Robinson.
Callahan's is a bright, well lit, cheerful place usually. So, but that's all I can come up with.
It is by Howard Waldrop, and the story is Do Ya Wanna Dance?
Okay.
All right. Number eight. Dad was in the basement centrifuging mouse spleen hybridoma when I informed him that I had enrolled in the Wilford Military Academy of Beauty.
First, thank you so much for reminding me of the basement again. Yeah, keep rubbing that in. I don't know. It's obviously a funny story or a humorous story.
Yeah, it's by Mark Lehner, who I believe is a humorist.
Right.
Fugitive from a centrifuge.
Okay.
Number nine. The gray-faced person came along the street where old Mr. and Mrs. Gumbiner lived.
That's a good name.
Yeah, Gumbiner is a good name.
Gumbiner is a good name. Charles Dickens.
It's Avram Davidson.
Oh, okay.
The story is The Golem.
Yeah, Avram Davidson, I don't know if he's specialized in, but he and Harlan Ellison had like a subgenre they did of Jewish science fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, can you get a minion on a planet that has aliens?
Can I get a minion? Oi!
Yeah. And
oi, I need a minion. Can I get a minion?
And do these aliens count as Orthodox? You know, it was, anyway, the funny idea of transposing your religion onto a different planet. But
yeah, and all of its idiosyncrasies. Yes, yes. I remember Natalie Goldberg giving a talk and about free writing and writing in her journals. And she said, for the first 10 years, I had to write about being Jewish. Then I was done.
She's writing down the bones, right?
Yes, she's writing down the bones. Good book. Good.
Yeah, I recommended that. We have a reader who asked me to do a little editing, some opining. Mm-hmm. And one of the books I recommended was that one.
Yeah, Writing Down the Bones. It's very, very good for detail and lots of good examples and so forth.
Yeah. What's next?
Number 10. He stood in the Portobello Road and screamed up at the closed windows, Anatole, Anatole, hey, come to the window, open up. Hey, Anatole, the war's started.
Oh. I feel strongly I should know this.
I know. We've been talking about him the whole science fiction university. It is Harlan Ellison.
By okay. So, all right.
Which story do you think it is?
In the fifth year of the war?
It's Django.
Django. Oh, okay. All right. Got it. Yeah, I would also have gotten I would have gotten a little bit tangled up with Ray Bradbury's wonderful short story called The Utterly Perfect Murder.
Oh.
Which also has a scene with someone under a window asking another person to come out. But it was come out and play, I think.
Ah.
So.
All right. Number 11.
Uh-huh.
Kamala Shastri came back to this world as she had left it, naked.
Boy, that sounds familiar. Philip Jose Farmer is Taken.
No, and Philip Jose Farmer is not repeated.
Okay. Resurrection. The only one I can think of at the moment is Philip Jose Farmer, To Your Scattered Bodies Go, and that can't be it because Philip. So I give. I don't know. It sounds familiar though.
It is James Patrick Kelly, Think Like a Dinosaur.
Ooh, that I have read that story.
Yeah.
That is a good story.
Oh, okay. That's James Patrick Kelly.
Yeah.
Think it's, like a dinosaur.
It's the consequences of teleportation.
Ooh.
If you're not really being teleported, you're being duplicated.
Oh.
And
it has kind of a Land of the Lost element to it or something with the Think Like a Dinosaur?
I don't want to give too much of it away, but it is the reptiles, I think the reptiles that teach us how to use their technology.
Oh, wow.
It's essentially replicating you in every detail at the other end of the galaxy or wherever you want to go.
Hmm.
But since you're not being teleported, there's now two of you.
Mm-hmm.
And their protocol demands that the original be destroyed instantly.
Wow.
And there's a glitch.
Ah.
And the glitch causes two people to exist simultaneously. And the first one wakes up.
Wow.
And now it's...
And wait, now what happens?
I don't want to die.
Leave it at that. Leave it at that.
Yeah, I'll leave it there. It's a fine story. It's a fine story.
All right. Number 12. Here is a story about a man who had too much power and a man who took too much. But don't worry. I'm not going political on you.
Sounds a little bit like Cordwainer Smith, but I don't think that's right.
It's Ted Sturgeon.
Ted Sturgeon! America loves Ted Sturgeon.
And the story is Microcosmic God.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Not the best title he ever did. The best title he ever did was, I think, If All Men Were Brothers, Would You Let One Marry Your Sister?
Oof.
So, yeah, exactly. Exactly. You want to go after taboos? Here you go. Yeah.
Number 13. This is a slightly unusual request, said Dr. Wagner, with what he hoped was commendable restraint. As far as I know, it's the first time anyone's been asked to supply a Tibetan monastery with an automatic sequence computer.
Oh, see, okay. That last bit.
It gives it away?
Yeah. That's the title of the book. That's the title of the collection, The 9 Billion Names of God.
Ah.
By Arthur Clarke.
Arthur Clarke. That's right. 14. X, or Roman numeral 10. This day, when it had light, Mother called me wretch. You wretch, she said. I saw in her eyes the anger. I wonder what it is, a wretch.
Man, I have no idea.
It is Richard Matheson.
Oh.
Born of Man and Woman.
I should really know that. Richard Matheson is a fine writer. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to number 15.
Mm-hmm.
In an October dusk that smelled of smoke and apples, a lady in a black duster coat and a broad-brimmed hat, heavily veiled, called at Rainey's Emporium in Foster's Glen, New York. She descended from the driver's seat of a black Packard, drawing the eye of every man who lounged on the wooden steps of the Crossroads store, and attracting a second murmuring throng of idlers from Alvin Vernier's barbershop across the way.
Okay. I closed my eyes for that one because that's a very vivid scene. And
Natalie Goldberg would be very proud of that.
Yeah.
Those sentences.
And all the sensory stuff, all the things you're pinging people.
Color and who's looking and
well, it's a small town or in the past, Packard. Mm-hmm. And there's apples in October, and that just reeks of Ray Bradbury. But
it does. But it's Esther Friesner.
Okay.
Esther M. Friesner, Death and the Librarian.
Oh, all right. That sounds familiar. I don't think I've ever read it, but it certainly sounds familiar.
All right. And I believe this is the last one. Yes.
I'd like to say this is a very good list.
Yeah.
Whoever picked these out knew what they were doing.
I will post the link to the quiz on our Facebook page and at my blog, and it'll be at your blog too. Sure. Links for the episode. Okay. Number 16, somehow the idea was brought up by Mom that perhaps the whole family would enjoy a fishing trip. But they weren't Mom's words. Timothy knew that. They were Dad's words, and Mom used them for him somehow.
That sounds really Robert Heinlein-ish.
Hmm.
A youngster talking knowledgeably about his parents.
Mm-hmm.
Juvenilia, whatever, and fishing. But I don't think so.
It is Ray Bradbury.
Of course it is. Why not humiliate me further?
It's Ray Bradbury, The Million Year Picnic.
Okay. All right.
And I love you, and we will get through this flood together.
I love you, too. And yeah, sure.
You are the right husband for me.
You're the right wife for me. All right. Well, that was really fun.
That really was fun. I'm glad we can do these hard ones like that.